Hello and welcome to the first official EFF session of the 2015 DragonCon. So I understand that many of you may have been costuming and everything else since Wednesday night. But con actually does start at 1 p.m. So we really appreciate all of you coming and showing up for this early session in the Now, I'm really in awe of how many of you showed up for a session on women in science and technology, and I applaud all of you for caring about this issue that is so important to all of us. So thank you for being here. So for those of you who don't know, I'm Dr. Pamela Gay. I am the host of the Astronomy Cast podcast. We will have a new episode next week, I promise. Summer hiatus is almost over. And I'm also the director of a NASA-funded program to engage people like you in science, but I'm actually one of the coders behind it, so I'm really a tech head that when you ask me what my research is making really big databases. And so joining me is a whole band of women that span all sides of science, technology, communications, and we're all chicks doing a thing that a lot of people are like, you don't have the right parts to be doing that, and we prove them wrong every single day. Now, I will say some of us up here are here representing ourselves, not our workplaces, so any of you who are recording, please include that disclosure. We speak for ourselves, not for our workplaces. Now, without further ado, I'm going to go to this end of the table and ask my awesome panel to begin introducing themselves.
Hello, I'm Adrienne McDonald, and after being in tech for 20-something years, we'll leave that drifting off, I left corporate a couple of years ago, and now I do a lot of work with individuals on IT career development and leadership skills. As well as work with some C-level people on trying to make their workplaces a little bit more friendly to the women folk.
Hey everybody, I'm Veronica Belmont. I got my career started as a tech writer and journalist for CNET Networks. I left there and moved into the world of podcasting. I do shows about technology, video games, sci-fi and fantasy, and currently I'm hosting a show called Dear Veronica for Engadget.com, which covers viewer questions about tech health, social media etiquette, social media in general, what to deal with, what to do about your crazy grandma on Facebook who won't stop being racist, things like that. And I also host a tech segment for the Daily Tech News show every Monday.
Monica Dunan and I was a proud member of the United States Air Force where I fixed planes, electronics, for 6 years active duty. Did some traveling and then got involved with the world of computer games. So I've been making games for over 25 years now. I'm also a photographer. I get works on photography and consult with government.
For me, it wasn't a matter of gender, it's like, I'm going to do what I think is cool, and go on from there.
Hi, I'm Logan. I am a web developer for a coffee company, and I get to work with a lot of women who are learning web development through a couple of different organizations called Rails Girls, Rails Bridge. I do something for women's code. If you're interested in that kind of thing and you're in an area, you should call and talk to me after this and we can get you set up.
Hi, my name is Tina. I go by Romilly for reasons which may come out later. I, as a child, broke things a lot and my father would constantly scold me, and now I get paid to break things and design ways to break things for a living with software. I've done coding, but primarily work in quality assurance and leading teams, whether for quality assurance, technical writing, scrum team. I'm Kim Stedman. I work at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Southern California. I'm currently working on the Curiosity rover. I've in the past worked on the Opportunity rover and Cassini's mission to Saturn.
My name is Amy Stepanovich. I'm a lawyer by trade, working for the good guys. I went to law school to do human rights, and now work in a group called Access Now, doing human rights issues around the world, trying to advocate for users in technology and make sure that their rights are not invaded by governments around the world.
So, science, tech, These are not fields one normally just sort of wakes up one day and realizes, hey, I'm a PhD astrophysicist. That would be awesome. But sadly, there's like the 10 years of college that sometimes happens. Now all of us end up here in different ways. For me, it was a matter of my dad he dragged me out to the backyard and said, let's look through a telescope. And he said, go take a nap, we're gonna stay up late to watch Voyager. There were all of these moments of science that punctuated my childhood. And one day I realized I have to pick a college major. And I picked astronomy and political science because I was like, I'm going to go into science policy. And then I realized policy people scare me. And calculus doesn't. And so I just kind of kept going because that passion got sparked when I was little, and it never quite died. And that was my story, but all of us have a different story, and I want to hear everyone's stories. And I'm gonna jump to the other astronomer and skip around. Sorry, planetary rover driver builder, awesome person.
I'm sorry, I'm an engineer. I forgot to say that. So when people look at astronomers and scientists, they shouldn't look at me.
We like to tell everyone who knows science that they're a scientist.
Yeah, I work with the scientists, but...
So this is kind of like the actors backstage, people where we know that the people on the stage are divas and the people behind the scenes are the like legit people who make it go. She's the legit person who makes it go.
I make the science possible. So I guess the question was, you want to know how come I did this? I was always interested in the Apollo missions, even though I was born a little bit, you know, after them. Maybe not quite after them, but anyway, I was far too young. But then in 1977, I went to the movie theaters and saw Star Wars, and I said, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go into space. And then I found out that I was almost blind, almost legally blind, that they didn't take astronauts. It didn't occur to me they didn't take women, but they certainly didn't take astronauts with my vision. So I thought, well, I'll be an aerospace engineer and I'll design the things that send people to space. And then when I hit graduate school, there wasn't much of a manned space program, so I went to what my advisor called the dark side, into working on the spacecraft, and that's what I've been doing ever since. So you can blame George Lucas.
Who would like to go next?
I studied astronomy.
Go for it.
That was my major when I went to UCLA. I did not finish UCLA, but it was my major when I was in UCLA. And then I joined the United States Air Force after that. My introduction to science, it was just very natural. My father was involved with very early computers, so the big room size IBM 360s and 370s, and he'd take me into work with him on the weekends. And so there I was, a very small girl, kind of getting a chance to play with the key punch machines. And I really liked that they punched holes in the cards and they got this confetti down at the bottom. So I would play with these handfuls of confetti. And then he'd program the machines to play games with me, very simple number games like NIM and those. And so I'd be there in this big air-conditioned room with all the lights flashing around me, typing at the teletype. And then from there, I was at a school in Los Angeles that had a very early program for computer programming in junior high school. And we would We had those, again, key punch cards at the time, but we didn't have a key punch, so we'd have to fill in where the hole should be with a number two pencil, and then the cards would be mailed downtown where they'd be punched, and then they'd run it on the big green and white paper, and then they'd mail us the program back. So it was a, talk about a compiling lag. It would take days. But yeah, it was just something that I got involved with very early, and it just kind of naturally flowed from there.
I didn't have the traditional route. I mean, I loved space as a kid, and I really, really sucked at math. I still do. And my major was finance. And how I got to tech, I know. But I am good at making crap happen, so I. But I had a job where they moved a server into my office and said the IT people won't support this, so you're gonna have to figure this out. So I opened up a manual and I'm like, what the hell is TCP/IP? And I find out that I had an inclination to learn a lot about application architecture. And then 20 years later, I had a 52-inch Death Star fat head in my office. I was the cool kid with my row of Darth Vaders underneath. So when you came into my office, it was an experience. So I still got my space, sort of, but that's how I rolled into IT. So, because the IT department said no. Now I teach them to say yes.
Yeah, I kind of had an early beginning too. My mom worked for Coleco, the toy company, and my dad was an engineer there. That's how they met. And so early on, I had a lot of experience, you know, playing with ColecoVision and playing with toys and taking them apart and breaking things is usually how people get involved in that kind of stuff. So I was a huge gamer as a kid. So I had pretty much every console system that came out, and that kind of got me interested in computers. So my dad would bring me home some of his older desktop computers from work. I would play on those, try to get games installed on them, usually not well. And then when I went to when I was in middle school, I had a really amazing science teacher. Mrs. Egan, and she was just fantastic, and she would let us stay after school every day and build all sorts of crazy ball-bearing roller coasters and get to tinker with stuff and play on her computer and play on her systems. And I think that really kind of like encouraged me that this could be fun, this could be entertaining. It's like games in many ways. And then I went to school for audio production, so I kind of didn't do anything related to science or technology in those days, except I was constantly in the computer labs and I was constantly in the audio suites, just like interfacing with Pro Tools and working in that environment full time. And so I loved my Mac, I loved my computers, I game on PCs. And then when I got to San Francisco, I got an audio internship at CNET, which is how I kind of, that was my introduction into the technology world and tech journalism. And just from there, I started hosting and producing all their podcasts. I started hosting video content for them, and it just kind of snowballed from there.
Thank you. So as a
saddest clap of all time.
So as a kid, I didn't really distinguish a whole lot between boy things and girl things. My mom is a programmer analyst. She worked with Apple IIe's early on, so we actually had one in the house. I was the kid who showed up the math teacher by teaching everybody air handling when he accused me of cheating because I put it in my program. But at the same time, I enjoyed girly things too, baking and knitting, and the fact that my mom would sew things for my Barbie doll, whatever, didn't have a problem with that either. That said, at some point my math skills tanked, at which point I said, computers are bad because you have to know math to do computers, and so I was going to do anything but software or computers. And so I went and got a history degree. Trained to be a museum curator, and 6 months prior to graduation realized that how was I going to pay my bills? And throughout that entire time, junior high, high school, college, my group of friends were primarily the folks who were hanging out in the computer lab and just didn't even strike me as odd, but so it was. And so I ended up learning DOS over coffee every night, and right out of college, got an internship doing technical writing, and then just kind of followed through multiple departments in software companies. So I've worked in most departments so that I've got a good bird's eye view of how software is made, from all the way from marketing and sales through to artwork, coding, documentation, backside training. But always find myself gravitating to finding how is it working, how should it work, what do we care about, what are the bells and whistles that meh. And so quality assurance has been primarily my home, and making sure that the teams are working and communicating well together to make that happen.
And we thank you for finding the bugs before we do.
So my dad pushed sci-fi on me a lot when I was a little kid, and he would be like, you have to read this book. And I didn't necessarily understand why, and then I would read the book and I'd be like, this is amazing. And then we would have these conversations about what was happening in the sci-fi novels. And as I got older, I started realizing that the science fiction wasn't really science fiction. It was things that we were interacting with every day. And I went to law school specifically to work on First Amendment rights for journalists, and got involved in the range of human rights as they relate to people interacting with the internet, people interacting with technology, and how technology was really changing the game for people. It was allowing them all of these new abilities. They were able to do things they had never been able to do before, organize, speak, share their thoughts, connect with people, but it was also allowing governments, companies to collect more and more information about them and to really infringe on their lives in a way that also had never been happening before. So I moved from kind of a First Amendment world to this human rights world, specifically human rights and tech. So I'm one of those scary policy people that you didn't want to be. But then I do end up getting the tech side and the policy side kind of combined. But now I actually get to work on all of those sci-fi issues that I used to read about as a kid, are the issues that members of Congress are discussing today in DC that I get to work on.
That's awesome.
Well, like Romilly, I never grew up thinking that computers or math was manly or womanly. My mother was a mechanical engineer. She always kind of gently nudged me in a more technical direction, but I kind of only discovered it through having extreme envy of people who knew more math than me when I was in school, while I was a communication major. So I just started taking math classes, and while I grew up with a lot of computers, I was one of the people that had never programmed. I dabbled with HTML, but that's really, dabbling is a generous term for what I had done. I'd seen it. And
endorse me on LinkedIn.
But once I started learning math, I started realizing that I could communicate using math. So I was like, great, I found this perfect marriage. Let me take my first computer science class, write my first program ever. And I did that, and I found I was one of the few that had never written a line of code in their life, but I struggled, and finally ended up writing lots of programs, and now they pay me to do it, so works out.
Can't argue with that.
Now, it always is remarkable to me how you get a group of women together like this and ask, how did you get here? And it seems like almost all of us have these stories where there's that one person, whether it be the IT person who was evil or the parent that was useful, who motivated us through love and anger to figure things out. And this should motivate all of you that you can be that difference in the world that brings someone their chance to have a career they might not ever have imagined. Now, those of us who live in the federal grant world know that there are currently many different endeavors that there is the required line of demonstrate how you will bring women and minorities, because in tech, women are a minority. Black women are the greatest minority. So you always have to address this question. And I always look back and I'm like, you know, I was always the only chick in the room, but I was too stupid to notice. And did any of you benefit from these programs that we're all being asked to create today?
No.
No.
I
stupid like you were, because a lot of times I'm like, no,
I was always tangentially aware of it, though, because I wanted to go into the music industry, which is already pretty male-dominated, especially from a production standpoint. And then I was in the technology, like, you know, media world, and that was extremely male-dominated back then, changing in huge ways now. And now, you know, I advise and sit on the board of startups, and I'm often the only woman for miles. And I noticed that, but I'm happy that that's starting to change. But I do wish that there had been something like that to even just make me aware that there were opportunities like this in the world when I was young, because while no one was stifling me, while everyone was always supportive, I didn't even think about programming or think about engineering as a career, even though my father was an engineer. Like, it didn't even cross my mind until I was out of college, basically. And then, you know, I took some new media courses or, like, you know, Java programming stuff in college, but it was so remedial, and it was not, there was no one telling me, like, hey, there's great careers in this, and you're good at technology, like, you should look into this. Or even, you're interested in technology, you should look into this. And I don't know what my life would have been like had I known that. I mean, I'm happy the way things turned out, but I feel like there's this whole world of opportunity that I missed out on because I just was ignorant of it.
And it's kind of remarkable that on this panel of women who are so successful in science and technology, many of us started college with the, I'm going to do something that is not in science or technology or engineering or math. And the recurring statement of, yeah, I didn't like math. Now, I hate math, I will admit to this freely, and this is why I write software. The computer, it can do that shit.
If I want math, I'll just get an algorithm book and let it do it.
Okay, I feel really weird because I love math. It makes sense, and it never does you wrong. It'll always give you the right answer if you treat it well.
That's a big if.
I don't think I treat it well is the problem. So, we all escaped these programs that we're all now being asked to design, which I think is actually good. What was that first moment where you looked around and realized, I am surrounded entirely by men and maybe I should change this?
Well, I have the opposite because I went to Georgia Tech and I know you're all Georgia. Georgia Tech, and I was in aerospace engineering. I looked around, and in my class there was three women. I thought, that's kind of weird. But everywhere I went on campus, the guys would always open the doors for you because you were so rare. Like, a woman. Oh, here, let me get the door for you, ma'am. You know, it's kind of. And I just took the opposite approach. I thought, I'm special because I'm a woman and I'm here.
I also went to Georgia Tech, and I did computer science, so I did not have that experience. I definitely had someone that I didn't really know add me on Facebook, and at this point you could send a little message along with your friend request, and I think he said, I wanted to be friends with the girl from College of Computing.
I was like a unicorn.
I think unicorns are easier to find. So what other experiences were there? Like, for me, it was the first time I went to a conference and had to wait in the bathroom for a stall. It was the, wait, what happened? Wait, is this normal? And the, I want to go to conferences and wait in the bathroom. It sounds dumb, but this should be a thing. So you're nodding your head. What experiences have you had?
Well, it's gone both ways. So I went to Florida State, so slightly different. And we had to take a computer course to graduate by the time I was in college. And I was an advertising major, so also not a tech career. And I got pulled aside by my professor at one point, very early in the class. He's like, if you need extra help with any of this, please let me know. I was like, no, I actually understand. You're teaching Microsoft. They were teaching Microsoft Word. And I was like, I know how to open a document, but hey. So I've gone that way, but I've also gone the other way, where people have come up to me and asked me for advice, which has been very strange, where you are the person who who actually ends up understanding things. And the first time a guy comes up to you, and it was oddly back in college in a different technology class, and he was like, "You seem to understand this really well. Can you help?" And I was like, "Yes, there are two women in the room. Yes, I can help you." And I ended up doing tutorials for other students. And it was incredibly reassuring that I could actually teach the guys who in class would be like, "We know everything." And I'd be like, no, let's sit back and talk. And it was a really great experience to kind of interact with people on a different level where you are the person teaching them.
So other experiences?
I think what was my biggest trigger is I went through so much of my career in male-dominated industries throughout the tech cycle, but didn't really notice it was, or didn't acknowledge it was a problem. You sort of, you have that back, until one of my mentors, after the third or fourth year of me not getting promoted, and I was already one of the higher ranking females in my department, and I'm like, I'm outperforming. Oh, you're outstanding, or you exceeds expectations, but I'm not getting to that senior director level at the time. And he said, and he didn't work at the company, he said, "Have you considered it's because you're female?" And I'm like, No, I worked for a Fortune 150 company. That can't possibly be it. I sit on the diversity committees they put together. No. He said, "I want you to go back and listen. Listen to what these people are saying in meetings and whatnot." And I started really purposefully listening. And I thought, holy crap, there's a problem. So the next time they asked me to be on one of the culture committees, I said, "Why? What result are we trying to get here?" And I started challenging a lot more, which can be very difficult and put you in difficult positions in a corporation. And I think when I left the corporation, that's why I do what I do now, is because you can affect change if the organization wants to affect change, or if the individual is willing to step up to affect the change. So that was, mine was more driven out of a slap in the face realization of my own limiting beliefs and career limitations at the time.
And this is one of those contradictions that we deal with today of the, we need more women in science and tech and engineering and math. We need more women. We need to create programs for little girls to the point that little girls go, "Am I allowed to do anything other than STEM?" honest email. But then you hit the professional level. And I've dealt with, in the workplace, hearing a junior professor ask, "Hey, why doesn't she have tenure?" And the senior tenured professor said, "Oh, we don't give tenure to boobs."
Excuse me?
So these are the things that we deal with. How do we handle that irony, that hypocrisy? Between, we need more women, let's abuse the women. Because let's face it, that's what the internet does, and that's often what the workplace does.
So the reason that I go by a moniker is because I got into something called Machinima over a decade ago. And while I haven't had any such problems with my professional career, I got stalkers. So at places like DragonCon, or where I have a YouTube channel with Machinima work and so on and so forth, which, you know, was my hobby, I go by an alias, and I find that, you know, unless you have somebody who's really determined, that generally takes care of the problem. And I lost my train of thought. It kind of went too fast.
How do we deal with the contradiction between we need more women and let's abuse the women? I love when I stump a panel. This was not my goal, but this is unfortunately the lives that we live. And this is the life that we live when we look at Gamergate and everything else.
In the game industry, I have to say that I don't entirely, I mean, the question is obviously a very emotionally charged question, so I might try to reframe it a little bit. I think that in every profession there are jerks, no matter what. And there are people who will be mistreated regardless of their gender. Women will be mistreated, men will be mistreated, younger men will be mistreated, older men. So it's not something that's focused just on women necessarily. Though I have seen in the game industry, I've seen men say, we want more women in the game industry, but what they're saying is we want more young, cute women in the game industry, because it's like they're trying to increase their dating pool. I've seen it. It totally happens. And I point out women and say, they're all women, and they're like, no, those aren't the kind of women we want. I don't know if they're not fashionable enough or what. So, and how to address that on a case-by-case basis. And sometimes also I hear the issues that are being talked about, and there is a difference between large companies and smaller companies. In large companies, you're fighting against policies, and you're fighting against the systems that are in place, and how do you change those systems, and it's a slow, agonizing process, and then you get a step back, and you have to keep pushing. And in smaller companies, it's, I think, a different issue because they don't have the big policies in place. Instead, the culture always flows from the senior people in the company, the CEO, the owners of the company. And so that's where you have to look. That's where the culture flows from, always, always, always. And if you can have human resources people in the company saying, we must have a more diverse company, and if the CEO is not on board, it's not going to happen. And I have seen companies where the CEOs would promote, again, the young, cute women over the older, more competent women. Unfortunately, I've seen it happen. And what can we do? Well, not work for those companies. And and not get funding for those companies. And not be on the boards of those companies. And be very clear and open and direct to those CEOs and owners. This is why I'm not supporting your company. And maybe not tell them, it's because you're a jerk, but come up with some way of telling them, saying, this, your company does not have the culture that I believe is healthy for our industry. And you have to be clear and you have to be direct.
I had this weird, very sad discussion with a female founder recently. She had come to the United States from Ireland, and she was the founder. It was her idea. She came from a non-technical background. Doesn't matter. It was her idea, and she brought on a group of a CTO. She brought on engineers and people to work on the product. And about 6 months into working on this incubator, she decided she couldn't take it anymore. And she was visibly upset, and she was crying, and she was like, I feel like I can't hack this. And I'm like, it broke my heart, because we want to bring women into this industry, and we especially need more female founders and people with ideas and company starters. And yet she was feeling as though, because she came from a non-technical background, that she couldn't keep up with the rest of her team. And I had to convince her, like, this is your idea. You are the heart and soul of this company. Even if you have a non-technical background, you have the vision. You brought these people together for a common goal. Ultimately, she did not continue with the project. But it's hard because, you know, we hear all this stuff about work-life balance, and, you know, women sometimes have different objectives. And even when we have a technical background, it can be a very hostile environment to work in the tech industry and the science industry as well. But I think we have to show companies, and, you know, large and small, that even if women have the same skill set, you know, we also bring a different outlook to the table. You know, we have very different perspectives and points of view. And if you're creating technology that's going to be, you know, consumed by the masses, it has to have both of those perspectives in order to work. And, you know, when it comes down to it, we do think of things in different ways. We see things in different ways. And that's extremely valuable for the industry, and it should not be overlooked.
I have a quick answer, I think. We can solve it all very quickly. So a lot of people talk about the pipeline. It is a pipeline problem. You hear people, well, if more diverse candidates applied, maybe we'd hire more diverse people. And it's not just this pipeline. It's not that people aren't going in the pipeline. There's lots of initiatives, like you've mentioned, that's just shoving people in this pipeline. Like, this is great. You're going to love tech. You're just going to do so great. Like, they have freezers full of candy. Like, it's going to be great. But the issue is, less the pipeline, like the start of the pipeline right now, and like halfway through, where people aren't getting promoted, or they've just encountered too many jokes, too many things where they had to be cool with the joke. Like, they're tired and they just kind of fall. It's the leaky pipeline, as that's what other people call it. And there's no easy fix, but what I have found is the more people I talk to that have lived similar things as me, the more you realize, oh, this is a thing that happens, and maybe some people have figured out solutions. So I really think that there's a big push for people to start learning and not enough focus on mentoring the people who have already gotten started. So I feel like if you are someone that is relatively established, maybe you've only been doing something a couple of years, but you've gotten your footing, look for that person that hasn't found their footing yet and just talk to them. You don't have to have any like really meaningful insight to how to fix their problems, but sometimes just knowing that other people have had the problem makes you feel less alone, and it can help you when you're wondering if you're in the right place. If other people are experiencing it, then it's not just you.
But that's the, that when that female founder that I was talking about, she had only been working with male advisors throughout the entire process. And I was like, I really wish I'd gotten to you when you had first gotten here, because there's a whole support system of women in San Francisco that would have been there for you. Because she had this double whammy of being from outside of the country, coming to the United States for the first time, being thrown and having to live in the same house with all the people she was working with, being one of the only women in the entire incubator. That's a lot of fucking pressure, pardon my French. That's a lot of pressure for anybody. And especially for a first-time founder. And so, you know, it's like knowing that there's a support system, even if you're not new to the industry, even if you're just doing something for the very first time, even if you're far along in your career and just feeling like you're getting beat down, like just know that there's other people, men and women, allies, who are there to support you and help you out.
And I think what we're hearing is a synthesis of three different workplace characteristics that we have to deal with. On one hand, there's this, if the place sucks, don't stay unless there's like serious work-life issues. Now, there are going to be those moments of, well, my kid's in a special school, my husband has a great job, my wife has a great job, we're staying put. That's gonna happen sometimes. But if you're in a situation that sucks and you can leave, get out. And at the same time, if you're in that place that you can be the change in the system and you see another woman struggling, first of all, if you're the woman struggling, look around and go, is there a woman who's successful? This is exactly what the other panel was pointing out. And if you're in the position to, like Veronica, be that woman that says, look, it's women like that that have been hugely influential to me. There's two particular women that I remember at a conference back in 2006 looked at me and said, you need to leave your job because you're not going to push yourself. You're gonna be complacent and you're not appreciated. And they schooled me. They fed me well. If you're gonna school someone, give them food.
literal food, not like literal.
Literal food. There was lunch involved. And these two women are just like, you're gonna do this, and we're gonna check in on you. And they did. And 6 months later, I was starting down a completely new job path that led me here. And it's because of them. And I'm betting some of you can be those women today. Some of you need those women today.
We can be those women for you today. Seriously.
Yeah. And we're here. And I'm betting there's other people in your lives who are there too. Now, I'm going to try and leave a little bit of time for questions. So before I go over to questions, I want to ask, so for me, that big turning point of positivity, because life does periodically really suck when you're a woman in STEM, was having these two women sit me down and school me over lunch and say, you're better than this. And those voices are still in my head. And that moment mattered. And I'm still trying to pay it forward for that favor that they did for me. So for you, what have been those turning moments of positivity that just allowed you to keep going?
So I've had a lot of female mentors. I've had a lot of those women who have been in my life. But instead of looking back, a recent turning moment for me. It was amazing because I've worked at some different organizations and seen a lot of bad policies. And my recent organization just put into place a diversity working group full of people from, we have 7 offices all around the world, men, women, people of different races, colors, everything you can imagine. And they put them on this working group. And they said, how can we not only work diversity into our internal systems, so we're recognizing different needs and different cultural boundaries that we have to respect internally, but then how can we also work it into our external programmatic focus to make sure that we're also doing things, we're not only focusing on one segment of the population and these like small range of issues that face, with apologies, the over 40 white man who works in technology, but also the unique problems that everybody else faces and making sure that we're addressing those. And it was really inspiring that you're seeing diversity reports coming out of major companies who have time and resources to put into it, but we're a small 40-person nonprofit organization, and seeing somebody put the resources into it there was really inspiring.
That is an awesome, awesome company.
Other.
I think that having built a team at the major corporation and having so many women take management positions and above, just one right after another, and to still have that community of people and have people come down and go, how did you do that? And I'm like, we all work together, we have a great team and we support each other, and even now 2 or 3 years later they all keep connected. And having even the vice presidents come back to me and say, hey, what do you think about this? Or, hey, you really did a good job there. And you made a difference in someone's life where they were able to negotiate more time for the mythical work-life balance, right? Or the, or having the, I feel more successful, or thank you because you actually thought I could do this. I never thought I could do this. And sometimes it's giving somebody else permission. And they shouldn't need the permission, but women in particular seek permission and validation. And if you can reach out and say, gosh, I really think you would be great at that, it is so impactful to so many different people. And that's what it's been done for me. And I try to pay that forward.
There's a big truth there, which is about validation. Because, I'm painting with a broad brush here about women and men, and there's all kinds of variations in there. But it is more common for a man to have the ego to say, hey, I'm cool, I'm going to run a company, end of story. And that's what they present, and that's what they do. Whereas a woman often, not always, but often will be like, I have all these doubts, what am I going to do? And so having that validation can be incredibly important.
Yeah, the imposter syndrome, yes. I think, is something all of us have probably suffered from at some point, and it's pervasive, and it's really frustrating. And being able to actually develop a strong ego is pretty good. I mean, but not everyone has to be that way. It's not everyone's going to have that force of personality or that. We're all different kinds of people. But being able to believe that you're good at what you do, I think, is key. But and this may be a little humble brag too for me. But for the thing that kind of turned me around and made me feel really good was I was invited one day to do an interview on Huffington Post, and they're like, well, actually, we're not interviewing you. This little girl wants to interview you. She started her own YouTube channel of tech product reviews. And I was like, and so we did this interview. I'm actually getting a little cryy right now because she was so cute and she's such a badass and she's so good at it. And she's 9 years old and she's getting products into review. And I'm like, girl, get it. And that just made me really happy that it was that one-to-one conversion of someone seeing me do something and being like, I want to do that thing. I am now going to do that thing. And that just made my life.
One of the facts that I learned that changed how I approach many different things is if you have a job opening and you look at the male applicants, you will get applicants who might have one word in common with the job description, and it might be the word the. have none of the required skills, none of the required experience, but they went, that's cool, I will apply. Women are like, there's this little tiny, and it would be good if you had thing that I don't have, so I'm clearly not gonna get the job. Mm-hmm. And learning that women need to just say, you know, it could be no one who applies has all the needed skills. So, expletive it, I'm going to apply.
If you're at 75% match, go for it. Because yeah. Nobody's 100% match. So go for it.
You need to YOLO the job applications.
Is, well, I don't have all of the qualifications. And I tell them, I said, the CEO of the company created the job description for me, and I still thought, I don't know, maybe. You have to
YOLO the job description.
Okay, other things on this side of the table. Go ahead.
So I was looking at this question again, saying stumper, and then I was realizing that the reason is because I didn't have a particular hinge point moment. For me, much like the results of an exercise program, it's not, gee, I'm gonna go work out like hell this weekend and I'm gonna be buff. It's little things every day, every month, every year that make a long-standing career and make a difference. It was the managers, both male and female, who pulled me aside and said, hey, you know, you're better at this than you realize, or, you know, gave me the exceeds, or encourage me to say, hey, look, you know, I know you've done management in this, or I know you've worked in that. Why don't you try that? And, you know, if you don't like it, you can go back, or you know, we really need you to do this, and we've seen this other skill that you have in spades, so we think you'd be a great fit for that. It's that kind of thing over the course of grade school, high school, college, and 2 decades of career that have made me say, sure, I can do that. And, well, you know what? If I'm not a little scared of it, then I'm not growing. I'm not being challenged. So I'll try that. I'll go YOLO it.
I don't know if I have a particular hinge point either. I know that I saw a marked improvement in my life when I started volunteering with like women programming groups and identifying women that I knew who knew nothing at that moment would be a better developer than I will ever be, like in like a year. And the excitement of seeing those women kind of come back and actually volunteer with the same groups and become organizers of those groups. So like dough kneading into itself. I think that's been what has kind of kept me going when it is hard. And honestly, development and science, like they're hard jobs because you're figuring things out that someone hasn't figured out before. It's not something that you just have to put the right pieces in place and everything works. You have to like make the pieces and then see if they fit together. It's a frustrating life, and if you add on top of it that you might feel a little bit alone, a little bit out of your league in terms of what you think you can do, having people around you that are also learning, that do learn, seeing other people's progress kind of gives you a hint of, well, maybe I've progressed some too.
And I think one thing to keep in mind is that whole, if you're in a bad place, get out. Because if you're in a good place, like when me and my programmers a couple years ago were working on a big release, I think we probably slept maybe 3 hours a night for 2 weeks. Don't do that. But we loved what we were doing. We got to the point that we were speaking what my husband thinks was a secret language. And if you look at the comments in our code from that period, they're hilarious, but made perfect sense because we found that magical, we were one human. And if you're in a good work environment, no matter what aspect of our many different fields it is, if you're in the right work environment, you're all working for one goal, and you're all one person working towards that goal. And this goes back to that other point that I forgot to bring up earlier. We are a diversity of voices. And I remember when I was a baby astronomer going to conferences, everyone looked the same. Everyone looked like a gray-haired white male, including the young Asian females. And now when I go to astronomy conferences, I don't have the weirdest colored hair there. And you see
a diversity of styles. We still don't really see a diversity of race. There are like 5 black people now. That's wrong and needs changed. It's still 11% women, which is still better than the like 5 out of 1,000. But the problem is, we are a creative field, and creativity comes from our backgrounds. And if we're going to understand this universe, if we're going to understand this software, heck, if we're going to model the stock exchange, which is a chaotic mathematical system, we need all the colors, all the genders, and there are more than 2. And woo! We need... and we need to bring that entire diversity to solving humanity and the world we live in. So we now have a few, very few moments for questions. If your question is not a question, do not walk up to wherever the mic is hidden.
If you want to ask a question, you'll need to line up here and we'll get a mic.
Okay, so mic will materialize magically right there. It is using XYZZY. Not enough of you laughed. Okay, first person, can you just be very loud?
Yes, I can. All the time. Okay, not that loud.
We'll give you advice.
Yeah, that works.
For the report for the team.
Okay. So, forget it, we found an option that isn't scary.
No.
Oh, does that work now?
Yeah.
Okay.
This one works.
Yes, go.
Okay, where are you? So, what would you say to the people, this is much better.
Yeah.
What would you say to the people who ask, well, why do we even need more women in these fields and in these programs? What's wrong with the way it is? Why do we have to push people? Why can't they just go if they like it?
Well, I think we did kind of cover this a little bit, and you, I think you just covered a little bit right now. It's all about those perspectives. You know, we can't move forward, we can't improve unless we have a wide range of perspectives from, as Pamela said, you know, the different genders, different races, different backgrounds, because, you know, if you're building products or creating things with just one viewpoint, you're not speaking to all the people who are consuming or understanding or trying to work with those products. So I think that's the best way to improve in these fields.
So would you say that that's the main reason there?
So think of it this way. You may only get one genius like Einstein per generation. What if it happens to be a little girl who's anything but white?
That's what I tell my husband all the time.
Yeah.
He's also a software developer. We met in computer science major. He's super supportive, but it's on a very local sort of level. Like, a lot of people think, oh yeah, my, you know, female friend or significant other is awesome. There's not a problem here because they excel at what they do and they don't really understand that there's a bigger issue at play.
And other people might excel more. Okay, it's over 90,000.
It's over 90,000!
More context, I'm sorry.
Dragon Ball Z, it's Dragon Ball Z. Know who Vegeta is, embrace him. Well, don't do that, he'll probably kill you. Hello, fellow FSU. I'm also an FSU graduated attorney, and I have somehow tripped into becoming a mentor for FSU law students, about 50 of them, accidentally. And some of them want to quit being law students and go into tech, and some of them want to somehow mold their law degree into some tech field. And I am an abrasive, loud person who's made multiple people cry. How can I become a better mentor in helping them? Honest to God, go into tech fields, not being a techie myself, just starting, I literally am taking FSU's like computer 101.
How many people on this panel have taken leadership management mentoring training?
That's a thing?
It is. Well, so especially agile gaming conferences.
Yeah, they're awesome. So in the software industry, there's this thing called Agile, which is a philosophy of getting shit done. And there are entire conferences dedicated to talking about different games that you can do in the work environment to get past different problems. And this means that you can basically go do this, and they will learn the lesson you want them to learn, and you can avoid your own personality flaws. Now, at the same time, I strongly suggest taking leadership training of some sort, because they don't prepare us to be management. And finding someone to go, this is how you manage, will make your stress levels lower, and with 50 of them, don't try and buy them lunch.
Cookies might work.
Most of the time we're just like, I meet someplace with a bar. It's like, you're responsible for your own thing, but attorneys need alcohol if they're going to talk about tech.
In terms of a podcast, there's a wonderful website called manager-tools.com. Two guys graduated, West Point grads, and then they went into human resources, worked Fortune 500 companies, and they know their stuff. And they do little half-hour intense bursts of information every week. It's all free. You can go there, and there's hundreds and hundreds of different casts there. Pick one, and search on mentoring, search on leadership. Spend a half hour. Maybe it's useful, maybe it's not, but that might be a place to start.
What was that again?
Manager-tools.com.
Okay, next question.
Yes, first, quick question. I have to ask, because I don't have my glasses on, and I'm sorry it's a little bit late, but I'll take the liberty of being the elder stateswoman, it looks like, from the group, so it took me a while to get over here. Okay, so this is Dr. Pamela...
Dr. Pamela Gay.
Good. We emailed each other. I'm Theta, who yes. contacted you. Okay. All right. So I tell you all that to say this, both the question and I'm sorry, a quick comment. Is the panel or are people familiar with the Nelson diversity tables done by Donna Nelson? And if you haven't, just Google Nelson, N-E-L-S-O-N, diversity tables. If you want to get a handle on, I'm an academic, and as I was telling Dr. Gay on email, I'm so glad, thank you for mentioning the point of, as women are a minority, and what we call minorities are minorities, obviously African American, Native American, you know, and so forth, Hispanic, Latina, because in the Nelson diversity tables, it will show you in academia, which is like glacial speed in terms of changes, really, it will show you how few there are of whatever you want to say us in terms of race and gender. It also includes men, you know, white men, it includes you know, as I said, women of various races doesn't differentiate in gender. That's done a little while ago. But nonetheless, my question to you all is this, let me put it to you this way, one last quick thing. Looking at those tables, and as I learned, as I said, I'm an academic, there are effectively three, tops four, African-American women full professors of electrical engineering in the top 100 ranked EE departments in the country, which is abysmally, and I just found out I'm one of them. I don't say that to brag, but I'm pointing out three. I knew the other two, right? But that's not because we don't exist. So here's my question, because there are people. I've been to conferences of women of color, blah, 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 and it fills the room. When I sit with a group of quote-unquote women in a meeting, and let's just be frank, normally when NSF whomever says women, they don't say so, but they normally mean white American-born females. Yeah. And when they say minority, they mean everybody else. Yeah. But my issue or my question is, when I would talk about blah, blah, blah women, and I'll say, oh, you know, and for, you know, women of color, blah, 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 the table shuts down amongst women. So what is it that you would say, or in your experience, would someone need to say, not you guys are preaching to the choir, I know that, but what is it where you think people want to hear so that they just don't go, oh my God, she mentioned race, and freak out inside, right? Because that's what happens, and so much so, all of us, we need to be working that much more together, because one of the divide and conquers is very simple. You know, we say women, but we don't quite mean, you know, the ones with the permanent tans, right? So I'm being silly about it, but it's extra.
Yeah, I was gonna say, can you be on the panel next year?
To have have the guts to say it took me 25 years to get to this point, and if I were not as I were, it probably would have been less than half the time. But I did ask about that, and as Dr. Gay said, I don't know who to ask. I'd love to be on the panel.
So I can answer that. So one, you need to apply for guest status next year.
Yeah, I'm telling you. I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
so my kids, okay?
Yeah. So. I do costume and cosplay. So
thank you.
And email me later and we'll help you. So first of all, women need to apply. Mm-hmm. We need to apply for awards, we need to apply for jobs, we need to put ourselves out there and say, hey, you're looking for the speakers, I want to be that person. Mm-hmm. Now the woman of color is much trickier. So first of all, you sadly do have to learn how to school the rest of us. And I've gotten to where I am by being schooled by strong women of color who are teaching me how not to say stupid things as frequently. Because we don't always even realize.
Exactly.
And so you have to basically be, unfortunately, and it sucks, the person who, when you're in the right crowd, is up front going, no, you don't realize what you just said.
Oh, yeah.
And then you sometimes have to be the person, yeah, and you have to learn when you're in the environment where you're just like, they all need to die, and then you take them later into the hallway and tell them why you didn't kill them but could have earlier. And it's a hard.
And I want to do that with more women of all colors, because I said again, quite frankly, normally I'm the one quote unquote minority women or minority woman within the minority, but so many times people shut down and don't want to talk about that. And I don't have a problem coming out and saying it, but I would like to say it in a way that people can listen and then be willing to make action and not just freak them out or scare them. So whenever, you know, as you, we talk later, but addressing that, I'd like to see more of that dealt with.
I think part of the problem when you see that shutdown is something that I've seen a few times is women, white women, because that is what you, as you say, when you see a panel of women and whatever,
here
we are. It makes people worry that by speaking up about that, you're invalidating their own hard things that they've overcome, which is not the case. But people are not always aware of the privilege that they carry. And when you tell someone that they are privileged and they've worked hard to be where they are, they feel invalidated.
Well, they assume you're saying that even
yes.
if you're not.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it is really, it's on us to educate ourselves, but not everyone knows that they need to educate themselves in that way yet. So unfortunately, you're just gonna have to keep doing what you're doing.
And it's awesome.
Yeah. Yes.
Actually, white lesbians get it. I mean, I'm not a lesbian, but those who are, no problem.
They also have the second level of, of the problem,
exactly.
So.
Exactly.
Okay, we're going to take one last question. I'm sorry, all the rest of you, email us.
I'll be short. Sexism in the workplace. It was mentioned, like, jokes, comments, confronting the person. Don't confront the person and let it keep happening.
Oh,
how do you deal with it?
Well, I've had this problem. I had someone IMing me. It was a coworker. We have internal instant messaging at work, and he just went way over the line, and he started telling me all these things, and I shut him down. I think you have to. If you don't shut it down as soon as possible, it's just going to get much, much worse. And I just told him, I said, this is inappropriate. I found out he'd already been in trouble for it, and I said, you know, I can take your job away like that, and if I ever hear of you doing this again, I will. I said, but you know, I'm happily married. Even if I wasn't, it was inappropriate what he was doing, and I scolded him, and I used bad words.
What you tolerate will continue.
It'll get worse, a lot worse.
It's really hard too when the person is in a position of power and you're not.
Yeah, and it's really subtle. Like for me, I feel like sometimes I work with a lot of guys. I'm a programmer, And when stuff they say, like, about their wives, and, like, there's implicit sexism.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's not like he said something directly to me that I could be like, hey, that's not cool.
Oh, so you're just one of the guys, right?
Yeah.
You're totally cool with it.
It's either you're being a bitch about it, or you're too sensitive, or, I mean, I just don't know how.
Some of the assumption is that you're going to get them to stop, and in some cases, you just got to leave.
Yeah, they're testing. And sometimes you just have to go, dude, seriously? Seriously? Yeah. Or just respond with a good meme. There's nothing to beat a good meme.
That's very true too.
Or YOLO your resume somewhere else.
Yeah.
And if they say, oh, gee, you don't have a sense of humor, you can reply like, when you're funny, I'll laugh.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Thank you.
Guys need to shut it down.
So I think we are out of time and they're about to remove our mics forcibly. Thank you for coming. YOLO your resume, support others, and be awesome.